welcome to If Cage Walls Could Talk, your weekly heart-to-heart on all things animals. My name is Jody Whitaker, and I am the founder and executive director of the Chicago Alliance for Animals, the Partnership to Ban Horse Carriages Worldwide, and the Center for Ethical Science. This show was created and brought to you by my all-grassroots volunteer organizations working to liberate animals from suffering and pain. Well, I want to start off with the fact that, sadly, tomorrow is the most cruel 2 minutes in sports. It will be taking place soon. The Kentucky Derby will be going on in about, 40 minutes from now. And hopefully this year no horses will spook and flip in the gate, collide on the track, or die in the dirt. But there is a very good chance one of those tragedies will happen because it happens all the time. The nonprofit organization that I work with often, Horse Racing Wrongs, has documented over 10,000 kills at U.S. tracks since 2014. That's only 10 years, and 10,000 horses have been killed for this evil excuse for entertainment and sport and betting and so forth. So their research shows that over 2,000 racehorses are killed across America every year. Aortic rupture, pulmonary hemorrhage, blunt force head trauma, broken necks, severed spines, ruptured ligaments, shattered legs. Over 2,000, that's about six every single day. So Patrick Batuello and Nicole Arciello of Horse Racing Wrongs will be on If Cage Walls Could Talk again next week to expose the truth about horse racing, the truth behind $2 bets. Next Saturday will be 1 week after the Kentucky Derby and 1 week before the Preakness Stakes. So hope you'll tune in next Saturday, and please don't bet or support horse racing in any way, shape, or form. It's the bets that keep this industry continuing to overbreed, exploit, confine. These horses are kept in stalls, which are basically cages for horses, more than 23 hours a day. So a lot of people think these horses have wonderful lives. No, they get out to train or they get out to race, and then they're put back in a stall for 23 plus hours. And it's just bigger than their body. They don't get to run free. They don't get to socialize with other horses. It's incredibly inhumane, and it's immense suffering. So please do not support this industry. And please listen in next Saturday. Real quickly, I want to remind people about our Lincolnwood campaign to free Spur the Tortoise, who was trafficked from her home in Africa more than 30 years ago and who has languished in a tiny display case in Lincolnwood in a pet store for more than 30 years. We need your help with this campaign. We really need Lincolnwood residents, but anybody can help. And we will be having an action next Tuesday, May 7th, from 7 to 8 p.m. So if you can join us, or if you can help submit public comments before the board, please reach out to me at chicagoalliancefor animals@gmail.com. You can also reach out through our website, chicagoalliancefor animals.org. Lastly, before I introduce today's guest, I want to remind everybody about the ordinance to ban the sale of fur in Chicago. This would ban the sale of new fur in Chicago, not old fur. So if you have your grandmother's old fur coat, you can still wear it. This is to ban the sale of new fur, so it stops the production and the keeping of animals in cages and then killing them so horribly for their fur. So we need Chicagoans to urge their alderpersons to support and co-sponsor O-2023-2983, the humane legislation to ban the sale of new fur in Chicago. If you have questions about this bill, have questions about what to say to your older person, please reach out to me. All you really have to say is please support the bill to ban the sale of fur in Chicago. You don't need the number, but it is O-2023-2983. All right. So now that we've got all of that out of the way, I'd like to turn to today's guest. Here is his bio. Bala Seisha Sayi, I hope I'm saying that right, is a board member with Free the Oregon Zoo Elephants. an educational nonprofit organization seeking a better life for captive elephants in Oregon. He is also a board member with the nonprofit Heart of Ganesh, which works to minimize elephant and human conflicts in range countries. An engineer by training, he is passionate about animal rights and grassroots activism. So welcome, Bala.
Thank you, Judy. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. And I know you had said that you'd love our interview to be a more of a conversation and a discussion to talk about our issues, our campaigns, to compare notes. And I love that. I'd love to do that. So let's talk about the problems that you are facing, that my campaigns face, how we can address them, and how we can learn from each other.
Yeah, that sounds good. I have a passion in grassroots activism because it's hard to address by the authorities. If it's a big organization, they could go after the leadership through legal means and financially hit a blow that could cause the organization to collapse. That's happened many times. Mm-hmm. And also the foot soldiers, so to speak, the people who volunteer their time towards the organization's mission, they may feel alienated from the leadership if the group grows too big. And this never happens with grassroots activism because everybody knows each other. There is no hierarchy. So I love the fact that many, many grassroots groups could affect the change. And I want to be a part of it. I want to learn from others who do similar things. And I know that you, with Chicago Alliance for Animals, have been working on horse carriages ban, among other things. So I want to learn from what's worked for you, what's not, and be able to share what's worked for us here with Free the Oregon Zoo Elephant and what hasn't.
Yes.
And so on.
Yes, definitely. I know you are doing great work out there in Portland, and I'm a huge proponent of communicating with other activists, grassroots and the bigger organizations, because we all have a lot to learn from each other. So I appreciate your idea on doing this, because unfortunately there's too much fighting in our movement, and we need to be more open-minded and discuss campaigns, strategies, steps, and any ideas for that matter to win. I'm all about effective activism and trying to guide passionate people who care about animals to take steps to make a difference. But before we start comparing notes and the such, I'd love to start out by asking you why an organization like yours is even needed in a place like Portland, as Portland is known for being very progressive in their attitudes and a vegan-friendly lifestyle.
Yeah, that's a great way to start the conversation, because that's a question we activists here ask ourselves. What are we doing wrong? This is supposed to be an easy population, so to speak, to make them care for animals. But why is it so hard? And over the years, I think we have some theories, but we are not sure. But the most overarching theory that we have is that if you already have a self-image of being perfect or post-perfect, it makes you less likely to take an action, I believe. Whereas if you don't have any image, positive or negative, your mind is open and you're open to possibilities. So to give one example, you were just talking about Kentucky Derby. That's a great way to bring up this contrast. Louisville Zoo in conservative Kentucky is going to retire their two elephants to Tennessee Elephant Sanctuary. Or maybe they have already started, but they have announced that they will retire, and they are going to close the elephant exhibit because they decided that's not a good place for elephants. And Oregon Zoo, on the other hand, they are digging their heels in. Uh-huh. They think they are doing a terrific work with elephants, and they're going to bring another elephant from New Mexico, I believe, they're going to bring in a bull elephant when we already have a pregnant elephant here at the zoo. So the contrast is just mind-boggling. In fact, Seattle did something similar. When the Seattle activists convinced the zoo that it's not a good place for keeping elephants, and they had to, because the public opinion was completely against them over time, and Seattle had to get rid of their elephants. But as the last way to stick it to the animal rights activists, instead of retiring them to a sanctuary, they decided to send them to another zoo, the Oklahoma Zoo, just to show that, you know, they have the last word as a final coup de grace, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's just, I don't know. To give another example, in Portland, we have a suburb, not a suburb, but a smaller town north of Portland called Vancouver in Washington. It's not to be confused with Vancouver in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And Vancouver has looser laws. The people there are more conservative than in Portland. You don't find many vegan restaurants, and so on. But the activists here managed to get the Vancouver City Hall to say that they are against the sale of fur. It's still not an ordinance, but pretty close. This is how it starts, right? So they made an endorsement for some kind of an ordinance to ban fur.
Mm-hmm.
And in Portland, the leaders are not willing to take even that step, the city leaders. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that it's because we believe that we are already there. We are progressive. So whatever we do must be progressive. And that is sadly feeding into our actions and becoming complacent in our own stances.
Right.
I don't know. Do you have something like that with Chicago? Or do you experience?
Do you mean like activists not getting involved or kind of falling off campaigns? Is that what you're kind of asking?
Well, more like, do the city leaders think that? You know, there are two ways to approach it. They may acknowledge, yes, this is a problem that needs addressing, but this is not the time. That's so common to hear, right? There is houselessness crisis, drug abuse, this and that.
Mm-hmm.
The animal issue is not a priority, but it needs to be addressed at some point.
Well, of
course,
that's
the most common thing.
Sure. Of course, leaders are always going to say animal protection issues are never a priority when you've got homelessness and you've got violence in your city. I mean, Chicago, we have, you know, areas of our city can be very dangerous. And unfortunately, a lot of shootings and people dying from guns. And it's horrible. For example, when we worked on the horse carriage campaign back in 2018, we got our ordinance on the agenda to be heard. And after a 4.5-hour hearing of the horse carriage side saying why everybody loves horse carriages, and then our side detailing how they break the law every single time they worked and how many accidents happen from this trade and how dangerous it is to put these slow-moving horses in the middle of downtown Chicago traffic, the chair of the committee got up and said, why are we talking about horses when there are kids being killed in our streets? And so she completely, after a 4.5-hour hearing, changed the subject and basically accused myself and my volunteers of not caring about Chicago's inner city youth, which is ridiculous. Of course, we care about crime and we care about children and we don't want anybody being shot. But you know what? You can talk about and fight for more than one issue at a time. And that's what we told them. And, so this chair of this committee blocked our issue, blocked the ordinance for because of her, because of one person in Chicago City Council. She blocked it, and it took our campaign 2.5 years to pass as opposed to doing it in less than 1 year. So what we did was we didn't stop. We kept reaching out to her. We kept reaching out to every single member of Chicago City Council and the mayor. And we proved to them that this is a trade that is not in the laws regarding the trade are not enforced, and nor do they self-regulate. So that is what I would say to any activist. If you come up against a city elected official who tells you your issue is not important, well, then you've got to find a way to continue to reach out to them until you get what you want, which is animal liberation.
Well, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I want to draw a contrast to what we experienced here in Portland when we tried to get an audience with here it's called a council, with the councilors, mm-hmm, about the zoo keeping elephants. They believe that they're progressive, right? So sure, they are already sold on the idea that, oh yeah, we care about animals, so we'll talk about it. So we had an audience and we explained the situation, and among the many things that the zoo is doing wrong, one of them that many people, even Portland, are not aware of, when the zoo was trying to be, was getting desperate, trying to have an elephant baby elephant, they tried all kinds of tricks to do that. And one of those things was, there was a beloved elephant here called Packy, who lived for a really long time. And the zoo made him mate with his sisters.
You're kidding.
Not once, not twice, several times. And it resulted in 4 offspring. All of them died prematurely.
Oh, my gosh.
Big surprise, right?
Right.
So this is one of the things that we put forward to the counselor, that, you know, this has to stop. And that's not happening anymore. I don't think AZA, the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, which kind of, makes sure zoos do not become like Tiger King zoos.
Mm-hmm.
They have certain rules about what to breed and what not to breed. I think this happened in the 70s.
Okay.
But still, the zoo has to own up to it. Mm-hmm. And this kind of rampant breeding has simply changed in how it's done. It's still happening, but for example, we have an elephant called Chandra. She's a Borneo elephant. Borneo elephants are smaller and from Malaysia as compared to other Asian elephants that are larger. And DNA research has largely taken the view that Borneo elephants are a distinct subspecies. And Chandra happens to be the only Borneo elephant, and she's a female of breeding age. So what does the zoo do? She lets the males here have a go at her. And the males are much larger as compared to her. And right from the beginning, right from when Chandra got to Oregon Zoo, she's been bullied by other elephants. And it's just not a happy place for her. And we tried to explain to them, to the zoo, that this kind of breeding should not happen because they are a different subspecies. The zoo went ahead anyway, and they even bragged about it. They said, we don't know who the dad is, because there are 2 male elephants, Samson and Samudra. And they said, oh, we don't know, but we know his name starts with a F, like it's a joke.
That's what anyway, the zoo said?
Yeah.
That boggles my mind.
They just made fun of it. We don't know who the dad is. And there are 2 elephants, so 2 male elephants.
Mm-hmm.
And we told the counselor that, you know, this kind of rampant... just to complete the story, by the way, Chandra, poor her, the pregnancy ended in a miscarriage. Again, not a big surprise. And it's probably for the better, because if the baby had been born, who knows what the baby would have gone through.
Oh, my gosh.
And When we spoke to the counselor, we told her all about this, the breeding. And when we brought this up, she said, oh, this happens all the time with wolves. I've studied wolves. And in wolf colonies, there are siblings pair up and mate. So that's very common. And
it's common it's common where?
With wolf colonies.
Oh, wolves.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't research. But apparently, because it happens with wolves, it should be okay with elephants. That's the logic. And we had to pretend to go along because we didn't want to call her out on that topic and, you know, make the whole meeting derail.
That's where I would say you do call her out, because I'm all about working with my elected officials and working with them and being polite and being respectful. But when they, if they lie to us or they bring up issues that have nothing to do with, you know, our mission or our goals, then it's time to make the public aware of that. I mean, for example, when some officials lied to us during our campaigns, my own alderman told, who I liked, who I met with multiple times. So he told me he was a co-sponsor of the bill. I was kind of learning my way at the time. And so I just assumed, I took his word for it. Well, and then after our bill got blocked, after that hearing, I went online to, you know, look at the co-sponsors. I actually called to find out how do I find out who is a co-sponsor on our ordinance? And I had to ask, and I found out, and I went online. My own alderman was never a co-sponsor on our bill after he told me he was. So I'm just making a segue here to say that don't believe everything elected officials tell you, number one. And number two, if they tell you something like what she told you, that, well, this happens to wolves, so what? This is elephants. It's a different issue. And the zoo is responsible for doing these inhumane, unethical practices. So it doesn't matter what happens in the wild, what animals do in the wild. They have to survive. What humans do to them in captivity is what we're focused on. So in that case, I would have let your volunteers know through social media that this is what this counselor stated, and please contact her and inform her, educate her on the facts.
The funny thing, though, is that during that meeting, the zoo director and the head elephant keeper were sitting right there,
mm-hmm.
and they had an opportunity to fact check, but they just kept quiet.
Of course they did, because they are protecting their zoo. So you can't ever expect anyone who profits off of animal exploitation to stick up for the animals or to correct an elected official who is also there to protect the exploiter in this case. So, that's very frustrating. So tell us about some of the elephants who are still at the Oregon Zoo and who's there and who's been there the longest.
Yeah, great question. So elephants have been a signature attraction at the zoo since Packy was born. He started it all in '60s. And the zoo hit upon this I would say luck, because I don't think they had much of science going on, like I said about breeding. They got lucky with a few elephants, and during the 60s and 70s, Oregon Zoo became like an elephant. It was known for its breeding program. It's basically a puppy mill, churning out elephants, and I think if I remember the statistics, 7 elephants died even before they became this was celebrating their first birthday.
Oh my gosh.
And it was just nonstop, one baby after another, and we made a lot of money. And because they had plenty of elephants, I don't know if you might already know this, but AZA, Association of Zoos and Aquariums, they have a program where zoos can exchange, they have their own currency. I don't know, you get two panda bears for one elephant or something like that.
It's bartering in living beings.
Exactly. So depending on how popular an animal is and how much it's needed in one zoo versus another and how much care the zoos can give, they have this formula where they mediate the exchange of animals between zoos. They call it species preservation or something. You know, there is always a euphemism for these practices. But because Oregon Zoo had so many elephants, they were able to get polar bears and other rare penguins and other rare animals from other zoos. And the problem is, Oregon Zoo is really tiny, and it's the heart of the city because it was started way back when people didn't know better. There was not enough room for all the animals, but they couldn't lose all these signature animals that actually bring the visitors. So they just constructed fancier and fancier cages, and you still have all the animals, but cramped. So for the visitor, it's a great experience, I would say, because everything looks spiffy from the outside. As long as you don't spend more than 5 seconds looking at each animal, you'll come away impressed. And that's sadly what most people do. These days, it's just for social media, take a picture or two, take a 5-second video, and move on. The elephant breeding program went through a little bit of lull in the 90s or so. And I think around that time, a public perception also started shifting a little bit. So the zoo realized that they cannot cram so many elephants in a concrete cell and expect things to work. So they started asking public for money for a bond measure that would fund them to expand their elephant exhibit. Not by much. It used to be 1.5 acres for such a long time, and they expanded it now to a little less than 4 acres. If you look at the online materials, it'll say 6 acres, but actually, many of them are off-limits for elephants. It's for people to sit and watch and exhibit and so on. And we have 5 elephants now. One thing I neglected to mention is after all these elephants were bred, many of them were sent to circuses. Mm-hmm. Some were sent to other zoos, but many of them were sent to circuses. And in fact, the last elephant born here at the zoo in 2012. So just over a decade back, it's pretty recent. That's the last elephant that was born. She's called Lily. She was called Lily. Sadly, she passed away at the age of 6. And she actually belonged to a circus company according to the contract by which she was born, simply because her father was borrowed from a circus company to impregnate the mother who was in the zoo. So according to the contract, the firstborn has to go to the circus, second born will stay at the zoo, the third will go to the circus, and so on. The circus is called Have Trunk Will Travel, by the way. It's in California.
Okay.
And Seattle Times exposed this. The zoo did not let anyone know about this contract going on. Seattle Times somehow got hold of it and exposed it. And it caused such a PR disaster because, you know, a baby elephant, everybody loves the baby elephant. And once it became known that she's not going to stay at the zoo, once she becomes bigger, she'll be shipped off, people got mad. And the zoo had to scramble negotiate a contract with the circus company and buy both the father and the daughter. Sadly, both of them have died. The father died of tuberculosis. The daughter died of herpes virus, EEHV. It's very common in zoo elephants. And so is tuberculosis, actually. It's hardly seen in wild elephants because it's humans who give elephants tuberculosis, actually.
Okay.
When the visitors are close enough and the zoo allows things like, oh, you can pay us $50 and feed the elephant a banana, that promotes close contact. And there are chances of one of the visitors passing TB to one of the elephants, and that's the end of story. Everyone would get it. Mm-hmm. And that's what the zoo has been going through one after another. If you look at the medical records, they've gone through aggressive tuberculosis treatment, and the drugs are pretty strong. Chandra, the bony elephant I spoke to you about, she went through a tuberculosis treatment that left with retinal damage in her eye. And she came to Oregon Zoo with only one eye intact. The other one was gone in an accident. So she's already blind in one eye. And with the other eye, she has retinal damage. So she's, I don't know, close to being blind. You could see her doing stereotypical movements, walking in circles all the time. And you can see the polar bears at the zoo just walking back and forth, back and forth. Everybody is losing their mind.
Repetitive.
But sadly, like
behavior.
I said, because Portland visitors are supposed to be progressive, mm-hmm. and they see the spiffy zoo, and they see these animals, but they have a hard time connecting that these animals don't belong here. They could go to a sanctuary. It's just not the people of Portland, or at least the zoo supporters, seem to think that these animals are our responsibility. So if they're not doing well, then let's throw more money at them. And the zoo is happy to collect the money because the construction lobby is strong here.
Mm-hmm.
And just to finish the story, so right now we have 5 elephants at the zoo. 2 are males, Samson and Samudra, and 3 are females, Rose 2, Chandra, and Shine, of which Chandra, after the miscarriage, the veterinarian said, I don't think she should get pregnant again, or she could get pregnant again. Shine is already past the breeding age, and Rose 2 is the only one who can get pregnant, and in fact, sadly, she is pregnant right now. I feel bad for a baby who has to spend the whole life behind bars unless we get the baby out to a sanctuary.
And how long have some of those elephants been at the Oregon Zoo?
Most of them, Rose 2 and Shine and Samudra, they were all born here at the zoo. So Rose 2 was born in 94. Shine was born in 83 or something. So she's in her 40s. And Samudra is Rose 2's son. So thankfully, they haven't had a son-mom breeding going on yet, as far as we know. And Samudra was born in early 2000s, I think. Actually, a quick incident I want to mention is when Samudra was born, she was Rose 2's first baby. First baby was a son. And as soon as he was born, Rose 2 tried to trample him to death. The keepers had to intervene, bring him out, and try to do it gently. They made it seem like, oh, she's a first-time mom, she's learning things, and so on. But we have a different theory. You see, Rose 2 suffered a serious incident in the 90s where a keeper tried to... She was still a baby. She didn't know how to listen to commands. And so when the keeper got impatient, she couldn't understand what he was trying to do. This was after hours, I think, or maybe towards the end of the zoo hours. She couldn't understand what he was trying to communicate and wasn't following orders. So the guy just took it out on her. He had the bull hook in his hand. Back then, it was free contact. Now they have protected contact where the elephants and the keepers are separated by a barrier. But back then, it was free. So he just went out at her. And they found, he sodomized her with the bull hook.
Oh,
and they found 176 lacerations around her. And this would have been completely swept under the rug if not for a visitor who witnessed it and complained. And the zookeeper, Fred Marion, that's his name, he got fired, but that's the extent of what they could do. They couldn't fine him. They couldn't do anything more to him. And that prompted the activists back then to come up with what is called Rose 2 law, which would make it a penalty in Oregon towards certain animal abuse. So this trauma of having gone through it, we believe she probably at a deep level didn't want her baby to suffer that.
Mm-hmm. Makes total
and
sense.
And we feel that's the reason she must have tried to stomp him to death.
Mm-hmm. Infanticide. Am I saying that right?
Yes, yeah.
Yep. And that's what she tried to do, was kill her infant baby to prevent her from suffering the pain and fear that she had years ago. And, you know, there are stories like that, human stories as well. I recall hearing about a slave woman who tried to kill her children because she didn't want them living the lives of slaves.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, animals are not that different from us. And what she was doing was to save her baby and not allow her baby to live decades upon decades behind bars and possibly experience the same trauma that she experienced. So it's so tragic.
Exactly.
And these things happen all the time in zoos. The zoo is not going to make you aware of that. They're not going to put that in their newsletter about how a mother animal gave birth and tried to kill her own baby.
And the zoo actually puts a spin on it as if, look, if not for the keepers, we would have a dead baby. But thanks to the hero keepers, they intervened and save the baby. I remember, note, the polar bear in a German zoo a while back went through something similar. And they made, note, a mascot and look how cute this bear is. And his mom tried to kill him.
And that's directly on the zoo. If an animal, a female animal, is trying to kill their offspring, that is on the zoo. It's not on the mom.
Yes, exactly. I couldn't agree with you more.
Right. I just want to read this.
They have the bullhorn, and so they make the PR stick.
Yep. They'll twist it, like you said. And in case you are listening and you don't know what a bull hook is, it's a long...
It looks like a fireplace poker.
Yes, it's like a fireplace poker with a very sharp end on it. And it's used to control elephants and other animals in circuses and in zoos. And if you ever see a zookeeper holding a bull hook, you know that that animal or that zoo is controlling their animals with fear and pain. So no zoo should ever have one of those items. But they do.
Actually, elephants are smart. What keepers do is behind the scenes, during off hours, they use a bullhook. But in front of visitors, they hold a stick.
Mm-hmm.
They don't use the bullhook anymore. And they call it a guide. The Oregon Zoo actually calls it a guide.
Yeah.
So They say that this is just to point, and this is just to, we just use it as a way to tap. But the elephant knows that the guy holding it is the problem, not the tool itself.
Mm-hmm. I just want to read something off your website. I should have done this at the beginning, but it's important to state, and it's a very good description of why you're trying to free these elephants. Captivity is a terrible existence. Elephants are some of the most intelligent and social beings on Earth. They are also the world's largest land mammals. In the wild, they can roam up to 30 miles a day. Matriarchal herds stay together for life. Bulls leave the mother at around age 14 and form bachelor herds and then return the matriarchal herd to mate. None of these natural activities are possible for elephants in captivity. Their activity is so restricted and their living space so unnatural that they suffer from lethal illnesses and conditions caused by their confinement. Bobbing heads, swaying, and pacing, seen in many of the Oregon Zoo elephants, are signs of extreme stress, depression, and boredom. I'm sorry I interrupted you there.
No worries. I was just going to say that it's interesting that you brought a comparison with slavery. And many people don't know this, but the zoo has its own sordid history.
Its own what?
Its own sordid history on this.
Sordid history.
So let me give an example. There was this man called Ota Benga, Otabenga. This is around 100 years ago. He is from a pygmy tribe. And somebody picked him up from his tribe and brought him over here for an exhibition, if I remember. But anyway, he ended up in the Bronx Zoo as an exhibit, as a human exhibit. Mm. So this man was displayed along with other animals at the Bronx Zoo. And people wrote to the zoo authorities saying this shouldn't happen. After a while, they relented and they tried to get him a house, and he was depressed. Long story short, he killed himself at the age of, he was just mid-30s. He was brought here when he was in his late teens. And it took the Bronx Zoo almost 100 years to apologize for this. They did not give an apology.
Mm-hmm.
During the, in 2000, during the George Floyd related protest that happened, that is when Bronx Zoo said, we messed up, we shouldn't have submitted a human, mm-hmm. and apologize.
Right. Well,
so that's the kind of institution everyone is supporting.
Yeah, and these are zoos.
When they go to the zoo.
So, you know, a lot of people want to think going to the zoo is a happy time, and but it's not. You know, you're going to give money to an organization that steals animals from the wild or breeds them unnaturally, and then they're exploitative hellholes that steal them from their families and homes, and then plop them in artificial habitats to put on public display for profit. So. No, there really is no defending zoos. We're starting to run out of time already. So let me ask you real quickly. I know that the Oregon Zoo was named one of the 10 worst zoos for elephants 13 times now. What are some of the zoo's failures? I know you've mentioned some, but any that you can mention real quickly?
Simply even refusing to acknowledge that the elephants here are not doing well. They just spent $57 million to improve the elephant habitat. So they are digging in, saying that everything is okay, because if they admit that even something is wrong, they are going to be questioned for that. So they cannot afford to say that the elephants are in any way or form suffering. And this leads to some kind of an impunity in which they approach the issue. So to give one example, when we tried to get Chandra to a sanctuary, and a sanctuary in Georgia, Elephant Refuge, North America, they actually offered to take Chandra at no expense to the zoo. In fact, they offered to take all the female elephants, but we figured, let's start with Chandra first. They made the offer, and we went to the zoo and said, you know, Chandra is suffering. She just went through a miscarriage, tuberculosis treatment. She's blind. She has a long list of illnesses, actually, low protein, low iron. She's getting bullied by everyone. And here is a sanctuary. And this was during the peak of COVID, when there were no visitors and the zoo was running out of money, asking the public for help. And we tried to get her to a sanctuary at that time, thinking that's the best time for it, because the zoo can save money and also something good can come out of it. But they refused. And we went to the Metro Council, which is a government agency overseeing the zoo, and they called us lobbyists. Mm-hmm. And we said, we have no financial stake. We are not getting paid by this. Nobody is getting paid. Mm-hmm. We are actually having you save money and the elephant leading a better life. And how is this lobbying? But yeah, they refused to engage further, because even yielding that little bit that they couldn't take care of this one elephant, that's going to set the whole pack of cards collapsing, and they cannot afford to do that.
Sure. Of course they can't. And what's the difference between Portland's Metro Council and Portland's City Council?
City Council is just the Portland City. Metro Council is basically for the three counties that form a part of the larger Portland metro area, which is including the suburbs. So you can think of it as a tri-county government. Even though each individual county has its own government, there's this is very unique. I don't know if any other city in the country has this extra layer of government. And most citizens don't even know about this.
So
they
which
don't care.
Which council would introduce legislation and pass it? Would it be the Metro or the City Council?
The Metro. The city wouldn't want to intervene in this.
You say they wouldn't, but can they? I mean,
we've tried. They don't want to. I think the politicians are very careful about stepping on each other's stuff.
Of course they are. Yeah, and I don't mean to interrupt, but. Definitely after this conversation, I want to work with you, and just because an hour goes by so quickly, and to discuss campaign strategies and steps is an hour in itself. So, but it doesn't matter what the city council wants or what the Metro Council wants. It's what the animals deserve, and it's what the advocates want. So it's important. I did look at your website, and you know, it's important that people take action. But I just want to let people know that it's important to contact all officials. So I would, you know, again, you and I can go into that separately. But I did put down the phone number and email for Portland's Mayor Ted Wheeler, and an email address. So if you want to help these elephants and help Bala with this important humane campaign, please reach out to Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler at 503-823-4082 and email councilclerk@portlandoregon.gov. So council, COUNCIL, clerk@portlandoregon.gov. So it's important to reach out to all officials and not stop until all these elephants get to sanctuary.
Yeah, thank you, Jody.
Oh, you're welcome. Definitely. And I also wanted, real quickly, like 1 minute, can you tell us about voting no on the zoo bond this May, right now?
Yes. Thanks for bringing that up. Right now, as we speak, we are going through the primary elections here in Oregon, where one of the items to give the zoo $380 million raised from property taxes for improvements in mostly visitor infrastructure, but also energy efficient water filters and such. It's basically a bonanza for the construction lobby, and that's basically what it is.
Okay.
And we are using all our influence to get people to vote no. Right now, I believe it's a toss-up. The zoo is spending close to $680,000 using a political action committee PAC to get this bond measure to pass. We don't have any of that. We are using our limited resources to campaign and get this bond measure defeated.
And when is the vote?
It's ongoing. It goes on until May 21st.
Oh, so it's anybody can vote. And it's for Portland residents only, I'm assuming?
The area residents, yeah, not Oregon. The three counties that comprise the Metro Council, they get to choose how their property taxes are used.
Okay, so Oregon residents who live in the Metro County, and please vote no on the zoo bond. And please definitely go to Free the Oregon Zoo Elephants Facebook page for actions and your website. What's your website?
FreeOregonZooElephants.org.
Okay, well, I'm sorry to have run out of time again. I always seem to, there's always so much more we can discuss, I feel, on this show, but an hour goes quickly. So thank you for all your great work and what you're doing to shine a light on these elephants' lives and their suffering. And I would love to work with you to help you in any way I can to get these animals the rescue they need.
Thank you so much, Jody. Thank you for giving us a platform. It's important for grassroots organizations like us, and we are very grateful for that.
Well, I appreciate you and your work, and I will be talking to you soon, okay? So take care and have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you, Jody. You as well.
Okay, thank you. Keep going. So before we end today, I just want to say that if you like my show and you think it's educational and worthwhile and needed, I would urge you to support us if you can. CAA pays for this show each week, so $10 or even $5 monthly could help me greatly to keep the show going. You can, there are multiple ways you could support us, but you could find out more about going to ChicagoAllianceForAnimals.org. So thank you very much for considering that. And keep in mind that my work goes beyond this show. We are working daily with advocates in Dallas, Savannah, Boston, Charleston, and I just got a new partner in Indianapolis that I'm guiding to help them ban horse carriages in their cities. I'm working to help ban the sale of fur in Chicago, working to end wildlife killing contests in Illinois, and of course, our current campaigns to free Spur the tortoise and free Rocky the coyote and ban animal sales in the village of Lincolnwood. The work never ends. So I would like to end today with this quote. We admire elephants in part because they demonstrate what we consider the finest human traits: empathy, self-awareness, and social intelligence. But the way we treat them puts on display the very worst of human behavior. That's by Graydon Carter. And that's so true. So please remember that zoos are not the hubs of conservation that zoo officials claim. If they were, they would shut down the zoo, turn it into a sanctuary, and focus on saving animals in wild spaces. And of course, there are elephants still being sold to circuses to live a miserable existence. So that's it for today. This is Jody Whitaker of the Chicago Alliance for Animals. Please visit ChicagoAllianceForAnimals.org or look us up on Facebook and reach out to help us with our very active campaigns. Thank you again and hope to catch you next Saturday. Bye-bye.